it's not that you have biological quote unquote alcoholism. It's that there are alcohol related factors in your biology that matter.
Welcome to the Ignited Recovery Podcast, a new way forward for anyone looking for answers but feeling left out. If you've been searching for empowerment, triumph, and purpose, you've found them right here. You won't hear the same solutions, and you're not going to have any excuses to fall back on, because Ignited Recovery allows heroes to rise and become their best selves. I'm Dr. Adi Jaffe, and I can't wait to be your guide on this journey. Are you ready to become an Ignited hero?
All right, everybody, welcome back to one of our fun conversational pieces we do sometimes here on Fridays. The reason I bring people on is to talk about aspects that I need support with. I don't know everything. Nobody knows everything. We all need friends who know things that we don't to help us. And Jeff is one of those people. And the conversation we're going to have today, to me, is really, really interesting. I got my PhD in psychology. I studied behavioral neuroscience as one of the main areas. And so biology was obviously a very big piece of the equation. But I got to say, it was a big piece of the conversation from a very deterministic standpoint. So the ideas around addiction were traditionally in society, these addictive genes. And so you have the alcoholic gene or you don't, and or your brain got so changed and altered by your drugs and your addiction, or maybe you were even born this way, that now you're stuck as an addict because you've completely altered who you are as a human being, and you'll never be able to function normally again. And I feel like I've talked about this before, but those are the ideas that people have around the biology of addiction. Oh, you know, that dopamine, it'll get you every time. Or, it's his dad and his uncle were quote unquote alcoholics. You know how much I hate this word, but then you must be also because you just got the alcoholic gene. The reality of biology is much more complicated than that. And you know that, Jeff, and we're going to go into that really deeply here. Your biology, yes, it's the makeup of who you are, but it's almost entirely changeable. Even your genetics are controlled constantly by your environment, what you put in your body. We've talked about that before. Right. And importantly, it's certainly not true that there's an addicted, alcoholic, addict biology versus a normal biology. That's just a complete falsehood. What we're going to talk about here today and what you're going to present is so powerful to me because we're going to simplify this for people. And we're going to say, look, yes, there are different kinds of biological ways people show up. And we're going to help, you're going to help them classify it, put it into some specific categories, and then talk at least about some of the most powerful categories there in terms of ways that impact people's drinking in particular, we're going to focus on today. And that will explain to people, why is it that individuals are different from others in their drinking? And it's hard to find the consistency. And I'm really excited to jump into this.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Adi, I really appreciate you having me on the podcast and diving into this conversation. I agree with what you're saying. And I see this, the biology piece of it just has been missing or vacant or skipped over. And so, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it with you.
I love it. So you told me, and we talked about this before, that in general, looking at subtypes that are relevant to alcohol struggles, let's say, there are 6 overall subtypes that are relevant. Do you mind just going through those subtypes with us?
Sure. So I would say 90% of the information I'm going to talk about today comes from Joan Matthew Larson's book, 7 Weeks to Sobriety, the Proven Program to Fight Alcoholism Through Nutrition. And Joan has identified 6 different biotypes, and 2 of them are non-alcoholic and 3 of them are alcoholic. And 1 looks like alcoholism, but it's actually hypoglycemia. So there's 4 that I see that are problematic. that I can go into a little bit more. And then these biotypes are determined through a self-report that looks at seven different domains, you know, that are in this survey that people, simply state, circle which is most relevant to you or what is most relevant to you.
Do you mind going over the domain so people can get a sense of?
Yeah. So the domains, there is like physiological effect, the first drinking experience, a hangover, patterns that develop, heredity, personality differences, and tolerance are the seven.
Got it. I think everybody can relate as you're talking about those things to how it takes biology, a seemingly simple term, and breaks it down into how did you first respond? What is this like in your family? You know, impact on stress, all the things that make up why people drink, they're all different. And yet somebody could have a mix of those. And what you were saying is those, depending on your answer, they're essentially kind of like six different mixes of these answers that have been identified.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And I did this myself, and actually I circled 12 of them, and four of them were in the hypoglycemic kind of pattern. And that really surprised me because I didn't see that in myself. I didn't see that I was, you know, using drugs or alcohol or food or sugar or anything like that to try to regulate my blood sugar. Yeah. And you know, what I've found is that when I do this with people, rarely do I find someone who is just one biotype.
You know? Okay, so that's really important alone. And I love hearing about your own insight that you got from this, but let's just name the six subtypes.
Yeah. So the six different biotypes, the one is non-alcoholic chemistry. The other is non-alcoholic, but there's a big intolerance to alcohol. And then the three that are alcoholic, what she calls alcoholic, is what I call the THIQ. So that's one. The omega-6 deficiency is the other. And then allergic addicted is the third. And the THIQ is, that is someone who is born with the alcohol dehydrogenous liver enzyme, or ADH. And, you know, they are born with that liver enzyme. And so alcohol is much easier to process in their body. They actually get energy from it. They don't feel intoxicated. They're the people at the end of the night that, and I think of my own experiences from in the past, you know, they're looking for the next party and the next alcohol and always going from one party to the next. And at the end of the night, you know, I'm wiped out. I'm ready to pass out. Where's my bed? And they're moving on.
Yeah. And so I want to talk about this subtype a little bit, because this is the closest one to what people are talking about when they talk about having an alcoholic gene. And as you mentioned, it creates a pretty different response for a while. And this evidence is still pouring in to some extent, but you know, everybody knows of, not everybody, that's not true. A lot of people who listen to this podcast know about naltrexone as a medication for alcohol use. And this is, to me, a little bit akin to the OPRM1 gene that was found for a while. I don't know if you know anything about this one in particular, but it has to do not with the way alcohol gets processed, but with the way alcohol affects an opiate sensor in,
yes.
in the brain. And because naltrexone blocks opiate receptors, it was thought, oh my God, the people who have this one OPRM1 variant, they're alcoholics. And for a while, people were really, really excited about it. And you can block it with naltrexone. Turned out it's not that simple. Surprise, surprise. And we did genetics tests at Alternatives at the rehab that I used to run. And we definitely found that people who had two copies of this gene seem to have more severe struggles with alcohol.
Yeah.
And what I'm hearing is there's a similar pattern in people with this specific ALDH, alcohol dehydrogenase enzymes that break down. Now there's a variant that I've heard of for years, which is the opposite. They have a really hard time processing alcohol, and it sort of makes it toxic for them. That's the ALDH2-2. You're saying here there's a subtype where it's actually really easy for them to process it. They get through it quickly.
Yeah. So the story, the backstory that I know about this THIQ biotype is, I think there was a woman in Texas probably a couple decades ago, if not more, and she was doing testing on the brains of people who were homeless, who had died, and they were alcoholic. And so in this testing, she found in their brain this THIQ. And THIQ, just like you said, it is associated with opiates. And so, you know, initially, I think Virginia was understanding this as, oh my gosh, these aren't just alcoholics, these are heroin addicts too, you know? And so then she did a little more digging and a little more digging and realized, you know, that some people have this THIQ in their brain, and it doesn't just like move through, it's going to be there. And the fact that they don't get hangovers, so they don't get like the negative effect of this, and the alcohol gives them energy, and, you know, they can even see themselves as being able to think clearer and get more things done. And, you know, that well may be true, you know, but it's like the body gets used to kind of getting the positive effects.
Yeah. And
there's more of them with this THIQ biotype than, you know, someone who has a biotype that's more in the non-alcoholic category.
Totally. And so one of the things, though, that I'm, as you look into the research of some of these things, that are really, it's important to understand, is everybody always wants to find the molecule that matters.
Right.
I don't know if this is surprising to you all listening by now, but there isn't one molecule that matters. There's a lot of them. And so THIQ is this chemical that builds up in your brain around opiate use and is a good marker for that. And the reason it's not that clear, it's not like people who have this subtype will always become quote unquote alcoholic, is because there are all these other chemicals and all these other things in life that matter as well. And so it's just, I just want to kind of bring us back to that idea. We're going to present these subtypes, and this is an important subtype for people to hear, because it makes sense to you. If your body processes alcohol differently than other people, it has a chemical compound, that an enzyme that breaks alcohol down faster and more efficiently, it makes sense that some of the other things that take people longer, more drinks, over more time to get, will happen to you faster. And also the other thing that is really important to think of, you will be able to drink more alcohol because your body got rid of it faster. So we all know, let's just take back this to stories. We all know people who seem to get drunk off of two drinks, and other people who it takes a 6-pack or 8 or 9, 10 drinks, and then like 2 hours later, they can drink again. Instead of saying they're alcoholics, if you can go back and go, oh, there's a metabolism thing here, their body processes this differently, I think that's a completely different conversation to have.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that I mean, when I started getting into this alcohol biotype things, one of the things that I saw, and just kind of taking off with what you said there, is when people really start to understand that there's a condition in their body, their body chemistry is wired, put together in a certain way that makes them more vulnerable. You know, it isn't just a matter of willpower and whatever shame they have, you know, about like what happened in the past, they tried or whatever the case may be, or even family members looking at their loved one going, oh, they're just a liar, or they're just an SOB, or they're just like whatever negative label. You know, it's like, that's the behavior they're seeing, and they're not really seeing, you know, this underlying vulnerability for alcoholism. And it's like, initially, this pattern actually is giving them benefit. I want to acknowledge it is giving benefit. The other side is they can do it over and over and over, and it can eventually kill them. And the benefit they get from it, like initially, they're not getting hangovers for the first, you know, 5 years or decade or whatever, you know, but eventually they do start to get hangovers, you know, so the pattern will change over time. And then they're just drinking to try to be normal.
Right. Which gets them back into the tolerance standpoint. Okay. I love it. So one, and hopefully a lot of people got a lot out of this. Oh, maybe I'm one of those people. The first time I drank, I could drink more than others, right? It starts making sense of your own lived experience. Walk me through another subtype.
Right. So another one, and this one can seem similar to the THIQ, but this is the omega-6 deficient subtype. And, you know, one of the things that stand out for me here is, you know, people with the omega-6 deficient subtype, they have ancestors who drank a lot. That's one way to look at it. Or they had ancestors who were depressed a lot. And the interesting thing about this omega-6 deficient subtype is alcohol relieves the depression. And it does relieve the depression initially. And so it's like ancestors, Scandinavian ancestors, or all the, you know, the, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, England, you know, those kinds of ancestors. And I know, like when I'm talking to people, one of the first things I listen for is ancestry. And so, you know, people with that ancestry, and it's like the old saying, you know, alcoholism runs in families, you know, well, the omega-6 deficient pattern can run in families that have ancestry in these areas of the world that I talked about. And with that comes depression. So it's like, you know, it temporarily relieves this lifelong depression. Alcohol temporarily lifts this, you know, and they too have this super high tolerance with minimal hangovers. And then, like I was saying before, same kind of pattern of, you know, a decade later or something like that, the tolerance drops, the pattern changes. But these are pretty much the people that need to drink on a regular basis, you know, so they drink, it relieves the depression, they go to sleep, they get up in the morning, they feel depressed. And how do you get rid of the depression? Well, it, you know, it's like, and then the saying, what is it, the hair of the dog that bit me or whatever.
Absolutely. And the whole point around the hair of the dog is to address some of the tolerance issues and withdrawal, but that could come into play regardless of which subtype you are almost, but maybe through a different pattern sometime. You know, like the first type that we talked about doesn't need to drink regularly. And yet when they do, they can drink a lot. So if they start doing that on a regular basis, they will still have some of those same tolerance effects as before. Whereas what you're talking about right now, this omega deficiency, maybe needs the impact of alcohol to help address other deficiencies that are underlying and are unchecked. And so they will use it almost like a daily medicine. They'll use it almost like a nutritional supplement.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. And I mean, from what I've seen, these are the people that can like, they don't eat in the morning. They're not hungry. You know, they may have their first food at 2 o'clock or 5 o'clock, you know, and, you know, that introduces a whole nother problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. You know, but I'll
is empty. They don't have a lot. Yeah. Okay. So that's a second subtype. Let's look at the one that was confusing to you and you learned a lot about, because I want to hear the story too, the hypoglycemic one.
Yeah. So the hypoglycemic one, it's like generally the people with this kind of pattern is they don't remember when they first drank, like what happened, what the experience was. You know, but alcohol can make them feel uncoordinated, lightheaded, spacey, you know, maybe a little sick. And they've never really been a heavy drinker. So it's easy to look at their drinking in comparison to other people's drinking and say, well, I don't have a drinking problem. You know, I only drink like a couple drinks, but they drink a couple drinks and they can get pretty drunk on a couple drinks. So they have low tolerance. And, you know, these people, the hereditary thing can, you know, be all over the map. It isn't as specific as the other two that I talked about.
Got it. So you said when you fill out the questionnaire, some of these things popped up for you and they were surprising. I'd love to hear why, because I think in general, and obviously we're going to share the book and we're going to share the assessment and all that stuff so people can have access to it. And then we have another surprise for you all who want to dive into this more deeply. But I'd love to hear how, when you were going, obviously just to use this assessment as you were studying about it, some of the things surprised you even.
Yeah. Well, so I mean, I have a mother who my whole growing up, I heard this word hypoglycemic in relation to my mother a lot. But I never really saw myself in that perspective. And hypoglycemia is like a low blood sugar. And then, you know, patterns, like how we're going to feel when we have low blood sugar is we're going to feel irritable. We're going to feel dizzy. We're going to feel a little bit like not grounded, not present. And it's like, you know, I know for myself, it's like if I go too far between meals, you know, I start to feel a little bit dizzy and really hungry, and like I need food for my brain to work, kind of thing. But I never really put it together. And for me, it's like, for like the alcohol I've had, well, I mean, with COVID last year, I didn't have any alcohol, but for me, I would have a glass of wine or two with my book club once a year when it was at my house and I didn't have to drive home, you know?
You're a very heavy drinker. Really
Yeah.
There are people listening right now going like, why are you even reading about drinking?
Well, I'm doing what I'm doing because of my own family story. And I grew up in a family of origin with no active substance use addiction, but my grandfather, my mother's father, had active alcoholism. And there was trauma between him and my mother that my mother never spoke of. So my mother, you know, when she got triggered, everybody needed to orient around her. And I, you know, when I was young and looking at some of the pictures of myself when I was like 3 and 4 years old, I kind of saw myself as, you know, mom's little soldier kind of thing. So I needed to be super aware of how she felt. And if mom felt good, that meant I could feel good. If mom didn't feel good, then I couldn't feel good. And that was all, pretty much the fact that my mom never addressed her own trauma, and her way of dealing with it was to keep control of a situation, i.e. keep control of the family and everybody in it.
Which is something we see a lot, if we're fair.
Yeah. And so I know my mom wrote books on health and cooking and food allergies. And so I grew up like around a lot of this kind of stuff, but I never really saw the like drop in blood sugar in myself. And I think how I like when I was talking about like that, I had like a glass or two of wine once a year or something like that. What I use to address my blood sugar, or what I had been using, is like when I go shopping, I would buy potato chips, and generally they wouldn't make it home, you know, because I would eat the whole bag. So I'm eating carbohydrates, high fat kind of stuff, yeah, as a way to, you know, address some kind of need inside of my body.
Got it.
So the hypoglycemic characteristics that I circled was, you know, one, I don't have the ability to drink or handle a lot of alcohol. And then another being that with a drink or two, I may have a sense of well-being, but any more than that, and I start to get, you know, tired and lightheaded and spacey and that kind of thing. And other hypoglycemic ones, there was another one here about, you know, if I haven't eaten, I can get drunk on a drink or two kind of thing. So for me, my, you know, eating on a consistent basis, or like protein, at least a protein snack every 4 hours, really helps me to maintain my blood sugar throughout the day. And then I don't have those drops. And there's a whole lot more strategies than that, but that's kind of the basics.
Here's what I love about it, right? And we won't be able to dig into everything, but I think, just name the book for people again, so everybody can remember it.
Yeah. So the book is 7 Weeks to Sobriety. The subtitle is The Proven Program to Fight Alcoholism Through Nutrition. And the author is Joan Matthew Larson. And she is no longer alive. She had health recovery systems or something like that up in Minneapolis. And she had done quite a bit of research on getting people off of alcohol. So there has been a lot of research in relation to what alcohol does to the body, this biological piece.
Got it. So there's a lot more to dig in. Obviously, there's an entire body of work around this, but here's what I love about what we're talking about. And that is, you know, in the abstinence myth, I talk about the four factors. Anybody who's been working in the addiction field knows biology, psychology, environment, spirituality. It's not a new concept. My whole point is that we need to integrate them rather than try to figure them out separately, right? And then what we're talking about here is even the complexity of the biology piece alone, right? It's not that you have biological, quote unquote, alcoholism. God, I hate that word so much. I just hate saying it. Or you don't. It's that there are alcohol related factors in your biology that matter.
Yeah.
The reason this is important to dip into, I'm sure people listening right now go, oh, wait, that sounds like my drinking, or this other type sounds like my drinking. You know, I believe that we are most scared of the things we don't understand. And so the first step is you have to understand what's going on. Once you understand what's going on, you can go address those specific issues versus what's happening right now, which is, well, you know, Jimmy drinks too much. He's an alcoholic. He's got to fix himself. What you're talking about is much more actionable and a lot easier for people to understand.
So, what I want to say in following up in what you said there, you know, when we look at the, you know, some of our history and the traditional way that people think about and, you know, treatment programs initiate, what do we do if there's an alcohol problem? There's one solution, right? You know what the solution is. It's like, be abstinent. That's the solution.
Never drink again. You got to quit forever.
Right. You got to quit forever. So one, there's these different biological factors. As you said, it is incredibly complex, and we have one solution.
And then we wonder why it doesn't work for 99% of people.
Right.
It's literally like if somebody walked, this is the first time I had this thought, but I'm imagining, imagine if when you went into the ER, they would go, you're at the ER, so you're sick. Go see that guy. He will do what we do with sick people. How many more people would die in the ER? I don't know, but a ton of them. Why? Because nobody's figured out exactly what's wrong, so they're not addressing the real problem. And pick any of the, right? There's a lot of things that happen in the ER. So it could be somebody who's shot or whatever the assumption is they're making about everybody who would walk in would be right for a small subset of people and would be wrong for everybody else. And and I work in a field where that's being done for over 90% of people who struggle. The solution doesn't work for them. And instead of saying, hey, our solution doesn't work for 90-some% of people, maybe the solution's messed up. We do the opposite.
And because that solution that doesn't work for a majority of people is pressed, and it's on some level, we all get conditioned with this thinking that isn't really accurate. So when people try it and it doesn't work, and they do it over and over, you know, they may try it themselves. Well, I'm just going to quit drinking. It was a really hard night last night. I said some things I'm embarrassed with, you know, it's like, boy, I'm never going to do that again. Actually, I'm never, you know, going to drink. And then I drink. And what, it's like shame, 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 shame. It just grows and it grows and it grows. And there's this outside message that we talked about, the one solution, which exacerbates that, the shame, you know, and so family members can look at their loved one as, you know, the problem, and the behaviors are incredibly problematic. I get that.
100%. And that's an important segue, I think, to the following. And you mentioned family members, so I'll bring them into this conversation. If this resonated for you and you're hearing, hey, you know what? My drinking or the drinking of somebody around me seems to fit into some of these categories. I want to understand more. You've got the book and you've got the link for that. But we're going to do a workshop. We're going to do a workshop specifically focusing on all the six subtypes and diving in deeply, the biological markers. What do you do about it? What are the best indications for care, both in terms of behavior, but also something you're really big on, Jeff, is nutritionally. What can you do to help reduce the onus and the suffering related to these? So I created a link for you guys, and it's going to be this. It's going to be bit.ly.com/ all caps ignited, then the number 4, and then the word subtypes in all caps. So ignited 4 subtypes for the 4 alcohol-like subtypes in here. That'll be the workshop link for it. And look forward, go to the link. It'll tell you everything about the timing for it and all that kind of stuff. But Jeff is going to dive in deeply to this. I know you all love reading and you want to read another book. So please go ahead and do that anyway.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always a good idea to have somebody walk you through this stuff. And this is something that you're passionate about, Jeff.
Yeah. And so, you know, you mentioned the book, and I highly recommend the book to people. And I've recommended the book. I bought the book for people, and, you know, and then I get feedback and they say, Jeff, this book is phenomenal. I love it. Yeah. You know, but how do I do it?
Exactly. What do I do about it now?
Yeah. It's so there's a lot of good information in the book. And what I have done here is to pull out a lot of this information and string it along in a process that really someone can do and take action on. And so I've, you know, created a program for people to do that, for one thing, but it's like there's the easy entry point is a survey that I was talking about, and in these seven domains, and people just under each one of those domains, they circle or underline the points, plural, that they relate to, and then it's scored, and we take that score and we look at, you know, what are the different biotypes that the score relates to.
I love it. And so obviously as part of the workshop, we'll do that and we'll do the survey. So people who take the workshop will be able to come out with actionable tips. You know, we talk about how not having the knowledge is scary and frightening because you don't know what to do. Knowledge is great, but knowledge doesn't change anything. You then have to take action on that knowledge. And that's what this workshop will be.
What would, in my ideal world here, people who came to the workshop, it would be great if they took the survey and scored it before the workshop.
Love it. And that's very, very easy for us to do. Again, right, we want you to leave. So essentially, you'll be coming in, you'll be able to score the thing and understand what your subtype is, and then go in and learn about it on the spot.
Right.
I love it. Hey, Jeff, here's what I love about this so much. And that is, I think when we can take complicated concepts and make them simpler for people to absorb, it means that the knowledge is more likely to mean something and to be taken in. And then it's easier to take action, right? Look, biology is a complicated concept, right? I had to study it for 4 or 5 years in school, and I still only got 60, 70% of the knowledge. The rest you gain over time. And I was focusing on neuroscience. I didn't study the endocrine system and hormones as well. I didn't study other biological system like the cardiovascular system and things like that, right? The system is complicated. The simpler we can make it for people, the more actionable it is. So thank you so much for bringing these subtypes to me, and then for bringing it to us and to the listeners.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. I really want to do everything I can to get this information out to the world, because this isn't new information. I mean, Joan Matthew Larson's book is probably close to 20 years old, but for whatever reason, you know, the biological piece of addiction is, you know, being dismissed, or it's only being addressed with pharmaceuticals.
Well, we know the reason. Let's just be honest about it. We know the reason. There's absolutely no money. There's not billions of dollars to be made in telling people to eat differently to solve their alcohol. There just isn't. It's
a different business model. You know,
very different business model.
The biochemical restoration kind of thing is a very different business model. But, you know, the more I've gotten into this, the more I kind of think, wow, this is like bordering on unethical not to bring this piece in, because I get when people, you know, they can go through rehab, they can try. But if they're significantly like one of these biotypes that are problematic, you know, their body's going to be screaming out, you know, plus they're going to have this memory of how they solved these solutions in the past, you know, and as it's like the people that get out of rehab and within a week they're drinking again.
Right.
You know, and it's like after they do that a number, it's from a business standpoint, it can be great because then the they have a relapse and they come back into the program. They have a relapse and they come back into the program. From a business standpoint, that could be a good thing. And you're absolutely right. You know, having good food and supplements and amino acids that you can get from any health food store, no one's going to get rich on this.
Yeah, at least not the kind of rich that will drive policy and government decisions, right? Nobody's making billions of dollars off of this. And that's okay. That's okay. I mean, that's our whole point here is to introduce people to new ideas and new concepts. And so if even only 5 people heard this today and come to the workshop and go, oh, I just figured out new ways to address my, I'm not even going to say the term, that term everybody gives people who struggle with alcohol.
Right.
Then we won. And so that's really the whole point. Can't wait for this workshop. Again, go to the website, guys, and you'll see the dates and the links and all that beautiful stuff. And I'm really excited. Thank you so much, Jeff. Love hearing this from you. Can't wait for the workshop itself and all the actionable things for people to be able to follow.
Great. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we had the conversation. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And for the rest of you, have an amazing weekend and I will see you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ignited Heroes Recovery Podcast. I really hope you found the information here useful and that we'll see you back here next week. And look, I want to make sure that this podcast is the most useful it can be for you. So please let me know by emailing info@ignited.com. If there are any specific topics or questions you'd like to have addressed. As usual, if you like this episode, I would love for you to leave us a 5-star review and rating. Thanks, and see you next week.